was the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The wordings were scratched on the chimney with care, in hopes that Asphyxius would not soon be there. The children were huddled, all scared, in their beds, while visions of bane thralls danced in their heads. And Cain in his leathers and siege with no cap had just settled their brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the field there arose such a clatter, he sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window he flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the lustre of midday to objects below. When what to his gunfighter's eyes should appear but a swirl of soul fire and a skeletal glare. With a little soul driver so lively and quick, a seether leapt forward, his claws going a click, more rapid than greyhounds the helljacks they came, and the lich whistled, shouted, and called them by name. Now seether, now slayer, now harrower and canker, on ripjaw and ripper, on stalker and nightwretch, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, Stignarans, dash away all. As ghostly as moonlight that dapples the grass, when they meet with an obstacle, straight through it they pass. So into the fortress the steel predators flew, with the eyes full of hunger, and Asphyxius too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the crashing and crunching of an iron lich hoof. I drew in my head and was turning around. With teleportation, Asphyxius came in with a bound. He was made all of iron from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of souls he had held in his cages, and he looked like a nightmare, a fear for the ages. His eyes, how they twinkled, his head without hair. His feet, his balance now, spell lists quite fair. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a grin. He clapped his hands gaily as the spectral legion came in. The stump of a puppy he held tight in his teeth, and the souls they encircled his head like a wreath. He had a free upkeep where your bound is all helly. Cain shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was not chubby nor plump, never left on the shelf. Haley cried when she saw him in spite of herself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know the grip of true dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to work, murdering work casters, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, giving a nod, teleported way to wherever he chose. He sprang to the rooftops, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Welcome to episode 10 of Chasing the Dragonfather. We finally made it into double digits.
Woohoo!
Anyway, I'm Glass. Also, probably the reason why we're so irregular about this podcast is because, you know, we don't want to bomb you with too much sexiness at a time. We all know that you need some time recovering in between episodes.
It's true. And also, an irregular schedule of reinforcement, you know, just makes people come back for more. And that is a science fact. So,
yeah, that's probably true.
It's 100% definitely true.
Okay. I'll believe you because you're a doctor, right?
I'm a doctor of headology, yeah. I think since it's been a little while, this episode, we just talk a little bit about what we've been doing recently, what delicious dinners we've had, what other factions we've been dabbling with, co-hosts, traitors. And then, I don't know, chat a little bit about where we think the meta's at just in general, I think. You know, zoom out a little from Crix, maybe. I mean, most of my talking will be 100% from a Crix perspective, because I haven't played anything else. But, you know, the meta's wide open. There's a deck one nerf in the pipe that is going to shake up what everyone has considered the ultimate pair. So we've got a whole new meta in 2018. So, lots to talk about. Let's start with Ryan. I believe you might be dabbling in something right now that is not exactly of the Dragonfather.
So after the WTC, there's obviously all the theme drops, and then we had the, not sure if it's the first or the second dynamic update, where there was a whole bunch of changes to the world and black cloud and stuff in Circle. So Circle was what got me back into Mark 2, so I kind of got a little bit of a hankering to play some Circle, and then, as luck would have it, I saw on the trading group a couple of guys selling off Circles. I managed to pick up a whole bunch of worlds and stones and century stones and shit for cheap. So I thought I'd play some Braddock, I guess, and see if we can shake up the mess with World War II, maybe.
I really like how you, like, just, I don't know, 2 months ago switched your Twitter handle from Orbless Ryan to Crix Hobbit. And then just decided to just go back to the Circle anyway.
And then pull Circle again.
Yeah.
It gets worse. I've been looking at like second lists, and like, I think like Circle are, they're not in a great space in terms of like list pairs and stuff, but they do have some good stuff. And I don't think it would take much to tip the, like the beast and the living stuff over the edge. So I don't know. It'd be a nice, palette cleanser before going back to the welcome embrace of Turek.
And what about you, Class? See, you. Well, I've seen your Rise and Hammer lists. I've seen your article on Muzan Minis.
Madrak, he's a temptress. Seriously, I'm having great fun. I'm totally thinking trolls. I'm looking at for Rise and Hammer, for example. I looked over all the pairs and I thought, oh, I can play that with Madrak. Oh, I cannot play that with Madrak. And I was not thinking, okay, Crix rolls over this, Crix rolls over that. Really not at all. Just, I was really just only seeing the troll's perspective.
Yeah, it's
different. I at ClawCon, I tried to play a Crix list that could take a beating. It didn't really work out that well. And then I put Madrak on the table and I just got outplayed on all sides, and I just saw lots of people bounce off the defense 16 armor 18 champions.
I've been playing against it a lot. One of our locals is back in the game. He's played that into me probably half a dozen times since we last casted, and it's far more challenging for Crix than you might expect. That said, we do have some very, if it becomes a problem, we have some very, very clean answers to it.
Probably, yeah.
I played Scar 1 Dark House into it, and it does not stand up very well to that.
I can imagine.
Probably not. It depends if you have Lone Riders or not, I think. Because if you only play champions, then you really have to take it all on the chin. If you have Lone Riders, you can reach out and break face. And then maybe, I don't know, take the first blow onto whatever it is that Scar is going to use to kill all the champions.
Well, so the main issue is that Stalkers do everything you need doing in that list. You know, they out-threat even the Long Riders, and you Alpha Strike with the Stalkers and Dark Guidance, and you just lift people off the table.
Maybe. But the Stalker dies when he gets hit by a Retaliatory Strike, though. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's an 8. You can actually, at the end of your turn, just put up Guided Hand on the champions.
You can work around it. And it's not like the rest. Obviously not like an Army of Banes with Dark Guidance is also a bit of a problem. You Alpha Strike with Stalkers, you take off 3 or 4 champs. Or have it savagely wound everything and Grievous stuff you're hitting down. And then you just feed a small number of Banes to the champs every turn. And you will eventually win.
Maybe so.
Because that list does, the Madrak 1 list does have a breaking point in the late game, where all of a sudden the champs start to die very fast.
Yeah, that's true. I found that as well. Or I realized that. That's it.
Like, it takes them a very long time because you're just missing so much. But suddenly, a few like hits in a row could really swing the game really fast. It has a little bit of a tendency to get into dice game situations. If you control the pace against it anyway.
And that's why the playing the Madarak list is not as trivial as you'd think.
I don't think so. I think you've got to get massive value out of every activation in terms of both time and casualties and tempo in order to not just get like bullied out of scenarios or to just choke on a swarm of opposing models.
I actually find that it's not necessarily about the casualties, but it's definitely about the time and the tempo and the position on the board. I mean, you need to be playing for scenario from the get-go, and you need to be sure that you're doing all the right things and you have the right position to do scenario.
I mean, luckily it's a fairly symmetrical list in general, but if you misdeploy a solo in such a way that they're not scoring on a flag for one turn or something like that, you could lose yourself the game that fast.
Yep, very much. Absolutely. And that's maybe a little bit my tricks experience from that. Is that, well, if you play Kriegs, that's what you do. You just deploy an extra solo on the side that has a flag and you're just done, right? You look at scenarios, you know how scenarios work because that's how you win 90% of your games. Same goes with trolls. So how to play scenario, that's something that's really, that's maybe a takeaway that I have from Kriegs into trolls.
Yeah, kind of.
And have you been looking at second lists? In a serious way?
Well, I don't know.
Something like Gunbjorn, surely. So then you've got two lists that can play into different types of guns. Like Madarak, you can just take it all on the chin and share it around. Like Gunbjorn list maybe doesn't get shot at all, and then you get cover, so you can play it into the sorts of guns that can maybe power through Madarak. I don't know if like something like Sloan maybe might be horrible for Madarak 1, maybe. Where Gunbjorn literally doesn't give a shit about Sloan. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I think Signar in general are not easy for Madarak because he dies quite fast to accurate shooting and accurate high-powered shooting. And if you look at who is running Signar at the moment, well, you have Nemo 3, who doesn't really need to roll to hit anyway. Then you have Sloan, who is very accurate and high-powered. And then you have Siege. Was maybe not that accurate, but he was fucking high power. I mean, if he hits you, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
And, well, add to that, you have Haley 3, who just debuffs your defense.
See, yeah, I suppose you need something that rolls into Haley 3. I'll put it that way. There's no, very few obvious Haley 3 counters that I can think of.
No.
So that's definitely something I've been working on, is trying to figure out a nice Haley 3 counter. And
yeah. It depends on the Haley 3 build, of course. But I think she's best with, she needs a bit of a melee presence. I mean, if you play the Gravediggers, it's all fine and dandy, but they don't, in my eyes, they don't seem to hit hard enough. I mean, that's maybe from a troll's perspective. But of course, if you add, I don't know, a melee, unit, and I guess, Sasha said to me, like, probably precursors are the best choice there. Hmm. But if you add them, all of a sudden, the equation is totally different.
On paper, at least, the kind of worst case scenario for Haley 3 is a bunch of very durable heavies inside that cloud wall and just all up in there. Because, like, baby Haley, she can do one with all the various buffs. Maybe the Trench Busters can manage another one if it all lines up so that you can Dark Shroud everything. But if you can put three or four that are, you know, accurate enough and have enough of these quality attacks that they can go to 10 when they get in there, that feels like a problem for her. But at the same time, I haven't got enough reps against her because she's been largely overshadowed by Haley 2 up until now, despite being incredible, because she's so hard to play. You know, she's very, very hard to play, so people have to dedicate themselves to it. And I suspect, though, in the next 6 months, we're going to see people who have gotten the reps in really, really pushing that Haley 3 list hard.
Yeah, and I think Gravediggers really makes a difference as well. It kind of gives her bonuses or
because tactation is a great skill leveler of a rule. So you don't have to be quite as precise as you might have done with previous Haley 3 lists. You know, to kind of even get to that basic level of playing it competently, the tactation just sort of lowers that bar a little bit, which is also going to increase your popularity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still think that really dominating a meta with her is going to require a load of practice. Like, we had a local tournament here a couple of weeks ago where one of the lads was playing Gravediggers, and he went into the tournament knowing that he was going to have some good games and that he was going to clock out in every single game. And that was accurate. That was precisely what happened.
Yeah. But even top guys like Robin, I mean Markus, of Lorelei Persuasion, he played at least a few games that I know of to really, really low clock levels. I think one game specifically, and I think Sasha told us about it, that he took a free strike with 7 seconds on his clock, you know.
Because Robin is stone cold and knows that he could save those. He could use those 2 seconds for that free strike.
Yeah, and it's just, stone cold, flip the clock back with 3 seconds on the clock and, you know, ready to win.
Yeah, like, it's a very complex list. It's got massive option paralysis, and it's not easy to beat. I mean, that sort of seeks into the major thing we wanted to talk about, really, which is where the meta's at. So I'm going to throw in my hot take on the 2018 meta, and that's that Haley 3 Gravediggers is the best list.
Definitely.
Now, it might not be part of the best pair, because they haven't figured out the other pair yet. Don't know if there is another pair. Like, you know, there's a Ghost Fleet, Dark Host, magical match made in heaven. We don't know if that exists for Haley 3 yet. I mean, Signar's got a deep bench. But in isolation, Haley 3 Gravediggers, I think, is the best list. And I think it's the hardest list to solve that's out there, but also the one that you really need to have a plan for. I don't think there's a lot of lists that accidentally beat it.
Definitely not.
Except maybe something along the lines of like a Kadar Jack spam that might just accidentally overwhelm it.
Does happen.
Maybe so, yeah. I'm not sure if I agree. Of course, as a Krix player, we learned to respect Signar very much. And even pre-Ghost Fleet nerf, I think Signar still was one of the factions that had one of the best answers to Ghost Fleet.
Yeah, I think Siege was a pretty good answer.
But still, I mean, we know that we need to respect Signar. But I don't know. I tell you, my butt still hurts from the beating Pat gave me at ClockCon. I mean, Grimkin and I think in Dark Menagerie is also very, very, very tough.
But that's also on my list of best lists in the meta right now is Pat's Heretic list.
So maybe it's Pat, maybe it's Heretic list, but sure, that's
horrible.
I mean, I'm not sure how to counter it with Krix in general as a whole faction. Just build one list that counters Pat, which I'm not really sure how I would do it.
No, but, you know, you can't counter the best player in the game. You can just, you know, try and set up a situation where he doesn't just win at the matchup phase and then really go for the best.
True.
Though what I've discovered with him is that he often wins in the matchup phase without you realizing it's happened, because he has formed a plan and you have not seen the plan. And it's this very simple interaction that when it's pointed out to you by him killing all your army, you're like, oh, that was actually pretty obvious, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could have seen that coming.
Lots of testing. Games. Like, I'm gonna try out this counter to this thing that you've got. And he's like, okay. And then afterwards, like, no, that was terrible for you. I was like, yeah, it was, actually.
I decided to, instead of calling him Robo Dunford, call him No Fun Dunford.
Oh, that's not fair. That's not fair at all. It's always fun.
He's so nice, though.
For him, yes.
No, it's always fun, even if you're, you know, getting your butt handed.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I've never not had fun playing against.
Yeah, I mean, he's a decent guy, everything, but nah, he was no fun. That was no fun, what he did to me. Stupid Arcana, triggering it when I almost killed one of his stupid beasts.
Hey, triggering Arcana is on you.
Sure. Yeah. It's very much on me, I know that, but still, was no fun.
Your own fault.
It was also my first time against Grimkin, probably that. I mean, second time I played against Grimkin, it was me deciding when the Arcana would get triggered, so that's different.
Yeah. I mean, most of the big Arcana, you will lose horrifically to one of them, and then never lose to it again. Well, maybe not never lose to it again, but certainly it will never blow you out completely again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sacrifice is the big offender there.
Yeah, that was the one that granted the title of Note von Dunford.
It's one of the reasons that Scar 1 Dark Host is just kind of sitting there on a tray in my house, just kind of going, if people start playing Madrak 1 and Heretic a lot, you just need to be applying some Scar 1 to that.
Yeah, probably.
You know what solves the sacrifice problem? Just applying Stalkers to everything so you don't have to think about it. Yeah. Grievous Wounds everywhere, sacrifice all you want.
Yeah, I'm not sure. This actually Lich Tree might be a good choice there as well. The only thing is that Lich Tree needs to debuff to really do damage, whereas Scar doesn't.
Yeah.
Though, at risk of plugging in other podcasts, Keith was talking on Views on Minis about the 10 Slayers version of Lich 3. Mm-hmm. We just combo strike things once and move on. You just apply multiple Slayers combo striking instead of debuffing.
Sure.
No. Not a fan.
It's probably a good skew. I don't know. It just seems very one-dimensional.
Oh, super one-dimensional. And even if it was, like, super, super good, I am not buying 7 more Slayers. I don't know why I own 3.
Oh, yeah, I know why you do. Because of Mortenebra and Mark II, dude.
I didn't even play Slayer Spam with her in Mark II.
No, it's not Slayer Spam. You play 3 Slayers.
No, I did play a fair bit of Mortenebra back in Mark II, but I played a lot of lights with her. Like, I played a Kraken and a Swarm of Lights. It was mostly about trying to deliver Stalkers to things. How times have changed.
I don't think I used Stalkers. I think I used, I used Heavies.
No, but, I generally use Stalkers and a Deathjack.
Yeah, that check, obviously. Overrun Deathjack to the face always works.
Obviously, the Overrun Stalker often came in at, like, surprising angles.
Yeah.
And, in fairness, Stalkers were far better at killing casters back then.
And at the beginning of Mark II, or the first times people saw Slayers, they thought they still did, like, kill casters all by their lonesome. But nowadays, people, I think, realize that it's not that bad.
Which, you see, that swing away from, oh, it's not all that bad, is now what you abuse when you play Stalkers with Scar 1. Because it is that bad.
Sure. About that, do you think it's the best build to play Dark Host? Why not play, like, Slaughter Fleet or something? You can just randomly push up this Stalker 2 power 19.
This is true. Now, the reason number one that I don't play Scar 1 and Slaughter Fleet right now is the models I want to play in the army aren't out yet. So,
yeah.
But I can certainly see the argument for it. The second thing, though, what has come up time and time again in Dark Host is the 2 clouds for Scar to hide in are absolute money. Because, you know, Scar randomly dies to a lot of things. You want to cut down to, like, 3 or 4 health sometimes with her feet. You know, you want to throw out a few infantry models. And in loads of games, I've just been able to look and go, as long as I stay behind those clouds, I'm 100% safe. Assuming...
Mm-hmm.
And that takes away a really big Achilles heel of a Scar 1 list. Now, Slaughter Fleet, when all the toys are out, you could do like a Smog Belcher Smoke Cloud to kind of simulate that.
Mm-hmm.
Terrain density on boards, I mean, there's often a spot on the board you can do that anyway. So Slaughter Fleet, Scar 1 is absolutely something I'm going to explore. It's another reason I like Dark Host with Scar 1 is I like Scar 1 a lot with other arm debuffs in the list. So that you're not a one-turn pony.
Yeah.
So in Dark Host, Banes. That's why I don't like her with Stixis, is you smash the armor for one turn, and if you didn't kill it all, you're going to have a bad time.
Mm-hmm.
So with Banes, you just continue to Bane things. At this point, the biggest question is, do I go for as many bodies as possible, or do I keep running it with the Cav? Because the Cav have the threat range, which is a big deal with Scar. She is, at the end of the day, a list that bullies. And without threat range, it's hard to bully as much as you would like.
The thing is, I personally just really don't like Scar 1. I mean, I used to like her at some point. Like when she used to be cool back in Mark 2, when everybody played, I don't know, the Lich and then some more the Lich. Then I thought she was really cool. but I really grew bored of her. And when everybody and their grandma started playing her, especially the 30 Bay Knights version, that just made me sad.
Oh, she's certainly not very exciting. I mean, she is powerful in the most boring way possible.
Okay. Yeah, she just kills shit dead.
Yeah, she's just like, all my numbers are stupid big. Apply models to other models. Win.
Something, yeah.
It's very hard to be, like, the ceiling for how skillful you can get as a Scarwon player is not that high.
Well, I'm not sure. I think if you're really, really, really good with Scar, I think you can dig yourself out of situations that other people would just lose in.
True, but I don't think that's down to being, like, particularly good at, like, Scar's nuanced plays or anything. I think that's just being good at the basic elements of the game.
Maybe so. But I think if you play Scar, like, I don't know, 20 times, you will reach 98% of her potential. And then the other 2% is by playing her, I don't know, more than 50 times or something. And that's, you know, not everybody wants to put in that table time.
That's true. That's true.
Especially not Scar.
She's there on the side. She's not the list I'm, like, excited to play. There's an awful lot of Grimkin running around, an awful lot of Magic 1 running around. She is a simple solution to that.
Yeah, I agree.
Sure. I agree, yeah.
She's a blunt object solution to those two lists that I think are going to be very problematic in the meta for a lot of people.
I think more with Dreamer and Orbitra. More with Child, at any rate, I think. More than Heretic.
I think most people will default to the Child, but I rate Heretic extremely highly.
Yeah, me too. But from what I see, I think that's mostly because of Pat. I don't see a lot of other people playing Heretic as much.
I agree that not as many people are doing it, but I'm fairly sure that they're wrong.
Probably.
Because, like, Heretic does everything.
Yeah.
You corner him, and all of a sudden he's like, I'm going to walk over here, spend 4 focus, and kill 5 infantry guys automatically. You're like, what just happened? I was like, oh, he automatically hits with his weapon. It's power 15, so he just auto-kills for every focus he spends, and now he's going to sprint away. Incidentally, I could do that to a heavy if I wanted to. Oh, you're trying to assassinate me? No, don't spell me, don't fall over. Yeah, I guess you can roll some dice and see if you can get through my weird maze of arcana and shield guards and things.
Too bad. Now I will apply a skin and bones to your face.
Yeah. He is very simply good. He just has straightforwardly very powerful abilities. But not in quite a one-dimensional way as Scar does. Like, that's in my pick for top 5 lists. Madrak 1 is in, at least in terms of lists you want to think about how to beat. Actually, I have a list that I scrolled in work. And my top 3 were Haley 3 Gravediggers, Madrak 1, and Dark Menagerie. What else do you think goes on that list? Maybe not necessarily meta-bending things you must have an answer for, but things you should think about when designing lists for a tournament in 2018, such as the Belgian Masters.
Yes, such as, well, if you're designing lists for the Belgian Masters, be sure that they are sexy. And be sure that you have the sucker rule somewhere. It's important. There's a separate, very elusive award for one who kills a caster using the sucker rule or abusing the sucker rule. If you manage to do that, you get a very, very, very special prize.
So what else is on our hit list of lists to be worried about?
So did we mention the mirror? Because, well, the mirror.
I don't know what list or pair I would say is definitely happening in Crix right now.
Yeah, Coven Dark Host is definitely happening.
Okay, you should probably have a plan for Coven Dark Host. That is kind of the default. But, I mean, check out the Eisenhammer lists. There's some Coven Dark Host. There's Coven Ghost Fleet. Coven in general, gonna make an appearance. But exactly what that list looks like, very, very... There's some Coven Infernal Machines in there. You know, Coven can play with anything. True. They probably don't want to bother playing with Black Industries. It doesn't seem worth it for them. But I don't see...
Yeah.
I don't see a Crix list out there post Ghost Fleet nerf. Well, Ghost Fleet / Denegra nerf. That is just automatically going to be there when you play against Crix. Or even, like, is super likely because we've got so many cool options right now.
That's true.
You know, we got all the Slaughter Fleet stuff coming out early enough in the new year?
I have no idea.
Well, you know, I suppose model production times are variable. So it'll probably be a long time before we see Scar 3 as a physical model.
Yeah.
But we might see the solos very quickly. For instance, that make the Satixus run. There isn't a Crix theme that's bad. Well, maybe Infernal Machines. You know, the Eternal Pathfinder problem with Infernal Machines is a bit of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else...
It's probably an issue with Slaughterfleet too, though.
Probably. Didn't get a lot of CID games in with Slaughterfleet, so I just did a lot of theory machining on it. Even looking at the critics list at Eisenhower, which is kind of the most recent source of, here's what a load of great players are playing. And I know because of the timing just after WDC, it's also a time where people are experimenting. But there's no pattern in the critics list that I can see of just kind of going, oh, people have decided this is obviously powerful. So I don't know how much you can plan for the critics mirror compared to how you could before.
The only pattern I saw is that nobody is just playing Ghostly Dark Host.
Yep. Because everyone's experimenting with at least one list right now, right? And I'm going to go out and limb with a second hot take of the episode. The diversity of possibility in Crix is good for, not just for Crix, but it's good for the meta. Because Crix are this unpredictable element in the meta that stops it boiling down to this is the dominant kind of list. Crix are like an alpha predator in the meta. An adaptive alpha predator. If some list, like I said, if the Madrak 1 list becomes too prominent, Crix have a shift that knocks it down. I feel like for Crix, any archetype that becomes dominant, Crix can knock it down.
Maybe.
I hope more factions feel that way. I hope that people in other factions feel like, especially as the CID cycles through and all the rest, but just in general, I hope people playing other factions feel like they can adapt that fast. But the ability to adapt that fast for Crix feels like the end state you want for all the other factions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like whatever happens in the meta, I'll be able to find a list. Except maybe for Haley 3, because I haven't figured it out yet. But I'm working on it.
Thing is,
I feel like the tools are there, I just don't know how to put them all together yet.
If that turns out to be actually true, then I think we did really make a step up from Mark 2. Because in Mark 2, there, as a Crix player, you couldn't really solve for Signar. You would always have an uphill game, whatever you do, whatever you bring.
So we still haven't added to our list of boogeymen. We've got Haley 3, Madrak 1, and Dark Menagerie with a variety of casters.
Okay. I think Cater, nah. Just no.
Not in relation to Crix or not in relation to the meta at large?
I don't know. They feel, oh, I've never met a real Cater player who's not mopey. Who's not like, oh my Cater, we suck so bad. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, a big part of that is that they had nothing resembling an answer to Dark Host. Well, to the pairing.
Yeah, true. And I think they'll bounce back off the nerf, but I'm not sure if they'll get to a boogeyman status. I think, yeah, Cater have a lot of options, and it's a very interesting faction. But maybe some of the obvious strong choices are traps. For example, I think Vlad 1 is a trap. He's really good into a bunch of matchups, but the matchups where he's bad into, I mean, cannot be covered by one caster. So if you build Vlad 1 into one of the skews that's possible, so either very jack heavy or either very shooty heavy, the holes that you leave cannot be plugged with just one caster.
So what about jack spam in general in Kador? I mean, they can still pretty much do the most efficient heavy spam in the game, right?
Probably.
At least know that your pair has the gear for that, right? Because you could run into it. The whole purpose of the list is a gear check.
Maybe so. It would be, I think if you bring the list that can handle Cater Jack Spam, if you bring a list that can handle Dark Menagerie, you have a list that can handle Cater Jack.
And I feel like you're catching a few other, like, potentially scary lists in the crossfire, like, The Drake spam with Xerxes 2. That list is quite scary, particularly if it gets to go first and take up the whole board.
The Drake spam. You mean with all the sprays? Maybe so.
It brings a lot of power to bear, and does so very fast. And brings a lot of boxes, and you know, does lots of attacks, lots of gear. As something that's in the back of my brain, like, how do I deal with that, or how do I deal with an EE style list, an elemental evolution style list. Like, you know, I mean, I made through together a Calandra list that had some like 13 lights in it with the new basher.
Yeah.
They're not a monstrous problem for Crix, those light spams, but it's the kind of thing you might see floating around.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about them, especially in Trolls, about the basher spam. I think there is a basher spam list out there. I'm not really sure which caster it has to be. Might be even Borga too. we just played in Storm of the North and have them all stumbling drunk around the hooch holler.
Oh my god. Then you just clock out the whole time.
Oh, me?
Yeah, having to resolve all the stumbling drunk. And then figure out your next turn after your turn having stumbled into the wrong place.
But the stumbling drunk, I think it's a hilarious list in the sense that, there's a lot of bookkeeping there, but somebody hits your basher. Okay. So it's stumbling drunks away. Well, if you move something else, it can now countercharge because it's no longer engaged.
Yeah. So your whole army is just like drunken mastering all over the place.
Yeah. But this is fucking, I think it's hilarious. One of the funniest games you'll ever play.
I think you need to play that with some sort of drinking game attached.
Totally. I mean, yeah, this, it has to be. It's like a list that you only bring out if you're in the drinking bracket. Also, for people, listeners who don't know what the drinking bracket is the bracket where you're in if you have lost at least one game and won at least one game. That's the drinking bracket.
Yep. You can't try and slide your way into the drinking bracket with just a loss and no just wins. Now you gotta get your honor win.
Yeah, just at least one win and at least one loss. So effectively, the drinking bracket is formed after round two, not after round one. Just so you know. There's a lot of background noise. What is that? Or is it you sighing, Ryan? Now there's no background noise. So yeah, anyway, there was a lot of background noise. Now it's gone.
Another thing I've got on my list is double battle engines, ?
Like, I
think there's a few factions that might look at that. I mean, you got a lot of Signar with just one Stormstrider. You got a fair amount of Turtle Power list. And I kind of think a couple of War Wagons might have some game. Maybe not two, but some.
Yes.
I mean, the turtle lists are definitely fairly serious. I did have a glorious game a couple of weeks ago where I was playing Scar 1 Dark Host into double turtles, where Dire Wrath single-handedly face-tanked them both.
Okay.
On the feed turn. That was pretty nice.
And that was which caster?
Hexy 2.
Yeah, I'm a Hexy 2. You can play the guitar. Also, again, for reference, it's not a turtle. It's a tortoise. A turtle is a swim turtle, and a tortoise is a land tortoise.
True, but the Animantarax is clearly an ankylosaurus, and neither a turtle nor a tortoise.
Yeah, but it's either you call it a tortoise, or you call it an Animantarax, but not a turtle, because it cannot swim. It clearly cannot swim.
If you're going to be wrong, you might as well be all the way wrong.
No. If you're going to be wrong, you must well be right.
No, you got to embrace the absurdity.
Yeah, you know, let's just agree to disagree. It's called a tortoise.
No, it's a turtle. It's a turtle or it's not a mantarax.
Okay, as stated, agree to disagree.
I acknowledge that we disagree.
Good. Also, I'm totally devising a special prize for you at the Bowser Masters that has something to do with tortoises.
You go right ahead. I am very difficult to spite. That's not true at all. That's not true at all. I'm a man of many rants.
Anyways, Scorn. I love how we're really totally so organized about this. Like we start with one faction and then really go on to the next faction. That's really organized.
I don't believe in this PP order stuff. Like let's just bounce around as our thoughts take us. How about Retribution? I don't really know. Do they have anything scary?
The new Jags, the new lights, they're scary for Ghostly, but well, yeah. So Assyria, I'm not sure. I think there's Rom. I mean, he's always gonna be a thing, but he's only gonna be a thing for those who know how to play him, and that makes him less of a thing anyway.
I always feel like I'm slightly more intimidated by a red player who's taking Rom than one who isn't. Because part of my brain always goes, but he knows how to pull some Ran bullshit.
Yes.
So I got to be on top of him the whole time, watching out for that bullshit.
Exactly. And that's why I'm more afraid of Ran, just because But you can't really tech or you can't really build for Ron. It's just, well, if you meet him, if you meet somebody who has put in the time to be good with Ron, well, yeah.
Ron's on the new 8.5 ret that just dropped as well, so Ron will definitely be a thing.
Sorry, complete.
When did the ADR drop?
Yeah, the new ADR's literally just dropped. That's why I've been quiet, I've been sat looking at it. So in light of what we're talking about, Ron is on there. Relative to the Grimkin discussion, Heretic is now on ADR. So Pat's wetting himself over that already. Basically means you can take out the tools you don't need for crits and put in like another heavy or carry on a rose or dreadrots or like the heretic list is brutal anyway. And now you've got.
Since ADR just literally dropped, let's maybe.
Yeah, let's do this live. Do you want to go through every faction or we just.
Please.
Okay, crits are third anyway. So Circle are going to have Tanith, Chromac 2, Balder 1. And Moser. So, I'm not seeing that set the world on fire.
No. I mean, you got some people who know how to play Moser, but if they know how to play Moser, they're good anyway. So, it's not going to exactly...
Yeah, Moser's kind of like Ran. You see someone rocking him, you expect a player that's got some shenanigans.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, moving on.
Convergence has got Orion, Axis, and Therion, and Iron Mother. Tiny faction ADR, it's probably always fine.
Exactly. If you're playing Convergence, you got ADR anyway, so it doesn't make a difference. Moving on.
Krix. Banewitch Agathia, because they just can't let that one go. They just can't let it go.
Killer already.
Wraithwitch Denegra, Denegra 2, which interests me a great deal, because new Denegra 2 is sweet.
Mm-hmm. Also kind of expected, you know? New caster on ADR.
Yeah, basically a new caster, so yeah, throw her on there. Lichlord Terminus.
Okay, then.
Don't know how much he benefits from ADR because his lists tend to build in a direction and you can't switch it up really. And Captain Icos. Meh.
Yeah. Seen / heard people play Icos to. I want to say great effect, but it's not great effect. It's
moderate success. He is fun. I will give him that. He is a very fun caster to play. But as soon as you start to try and refine his lists and refine his game plan, it gets very frustrating.
Does he pair with Denegra too? Because she's the obvious choice on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I plan to be playing a lot of Denegra 2 when the update hits, so if it so happens that one of her pairs might be, well, Terminus, let's be honest, is the better of those other three. If it seems like Terminus might be a pair for her, I will consider it.
Sure.
Okay, moving on, we have Signar, we have Beth Badox, we have Colonel Marcus Siege Brisbane, so Siege 2, I believe.
Yeah.
We have got Jeremiah Cray.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Allison Jakes. So that full rake of basically new casters.
Probably fun, but I'm not sure if, yeah. If you're not playing Haley, you're doing Signar wrong.
Okay, I just saw the rest of the Grimkin ADR. It's the Heretic, Old Witch, Wanderer, and King of Nothing. That is some bullshit.
That's fucking brutal. That's so brutal, that ADR.
That's brutal. I guess Grimkin are going to be like Convergence and have ADR forever. But
hey, Pat, in 4 hours, you need to go to the doctor.
Oh, man. That is... Yeah. I've articulated it with my bumbling noises. Kador have got Kozlov, Old Witch 2, Vlad 3, and Commander Sorcia 1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just all dudes that do the same. Apart from, so, yeah. It's not that relevant.
Legion, I've got Krissa, Thagrosh 1, Ryas, and Fianna. Fianna, yes. Thagrosh seems good.
Yes. So that's...
No, his, Children of the Dragon list, whichever one has the sweet character beasts.
This is a great pair. I mean, this is a pair that's actually just played like that. It just gives you 40 points of specialist.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, Legion are okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you can just, you know, swap out the throne if you don't need it. Just get an extra heavy or two, or whatever the fuck you want.
A little bit of flex is fine.
Yeah.
Especially if you're playing those two anyway. Mercs have got a pretty good one. They got Gaston 2, Osram, Ashlyn, and Magnus.
What?
And Magnus the Warlord, which is two. One, two.
Magnus 2.
But Oshra Masculine seems like a pretty sweet pair.
So that's out of the three best casters in Mercs, that's all three of them and Ashlyn.
Is new Ashlyn not good?
I don't know, but the other three are better. But what the fuck, man?
We can throw Mercs about, it's fine.
I got to call Wout also in 4 hours.
Alright, we got Minions next. We got Bloody Barnabas, Jaga Jaga, Sturm and Drang, and Midas.
Yeah, they're not going to happen.
Menoth is Malakus, Durst, Resnik 2, and Thyra.
Thyra is good.
Thyra is certainly good, and Resnik 2 is very good.
Durst is really good in Faithful Masses as well. Played against them on Saturday. All the paladins get pissed off when you kill dudes. All the jacks get pissed off when you kill dudes. So, like, that theme force makes up for the, like, the fact that battle doesn't give you plus two to hit now.
Right. It's just that if you have decided to play the game, my dudes have plus two to hit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which caster is that, Ryan?
Durst. Next we have Retribution with Helena, Ilara, Ran, and Raven.
There is something possible with Ran and then one of the two chicks. Oh, even the chick as well. Not Raven.
Yeah, Ran and Ilara are Elena. I think they'll be pretty good. Yeah,
one of those two doesn't really matter.
Gorn, I've got Zakhar, Jalam, Zadesh, and Supreme Optimus Zal. Meh.
Okay.
They don't need a good ADR. They got Rashad. And Derp Tortoises.
And Trolls, last but not least. They've got Ragnar, Cole Grima, Borka 2, and Grim 1.
Ooh. Well, I see options.
I mean, you can play a lot of lists out of Cole Grima. I mean, none of them are Madrak 1.
I think she's not the best caster in Troll, so I think she's a new hotness, but not necessarily the best caster in Troll.
I think Grim Angus is the best. I like Grim Angus a lot.
I think he's got a very sneaky stealth buff. With a rune bearer?
It wasn't even a stealth buff. Like, he got the rune bearer buff, and his feet stopped running and charging again.
Yeah, so anyway, he got a non-stealth buff. the only thing is, and that is again, like, it is a bit of a trap to play a trollcaster that shoots. Everybody wants to do this, and I really understand, because I want to do this, but I think it's always a bit of a trap.
I think that's true if you want to play a troll list that shoots. There's nothing wrong with playing a control caster with a gun. He doesn't need to, like, run an army that shoots particularly. Like, his gun increases threat ranges for your melee beasts.
That is true.
Apart from the spell that hands out Hunter, he doesn't do anything specifically to support shooting. I mean, control feeds tend to reward a certain amount of shooting, but you could play Grim 1 in
Ardenia.
Yeah, you can play it in Paradunia, you can play it in Band of Heroes even.
You might be onto something. You might just be really good in Storm of the North as well.
I think Northgate Raiders work really well with them.
Yeah, maybe just the odd big lookout if you really want to make sure that Rook can charge something far, far away. And it's the only real combined arms list in Trolls.
Which I think is what Grim 1 wants. Yeah, I got a lot of time for Grim 1. Borka 2, I think, is fun and interesting. And Ragnar is really solid, too. So, I think you could see something with that. Nearly every time an ADR list comes out, we're all like, yeah, I can see a thing there. And it basically doesn't happen outside of Convergence.
Yeah, or in this case, Grimkin.
And now that Trolls are not behind the 8-ball on, like, every matchup in the game, maybe they can start being experimental. Like, I don't think Madrak wins the whole ball game. He's just the new hotness and also a particular problem.
I think Madrak 1 is just like Vlad 1, trap. I'm playing him.
I don't think he's a trap. I think he's really, really good into a load of matchups. And I think the stuff that beats him is of a particular kind that you can start to think about answering.
What do you think, Ryan? Is Madrak 1 a trap?
It'll be quite interesting to see how things shake up, actually. Obviously, it's only really relevant in Masters of Champions, so the average steamroller isn't going to change much. Unless people want to get in their practice game for, like, their base list, so to speak. But there's a lot of possibly some good answers on that ADR for Crix, especially with Cyborg, especially. Social one I'm not a fan of with a sideboard.
I don't think might be interesting. I don't think Sorsha 1 is going to be really relevant.
You don't?
I don't think so. But, yeah, I mean, the obvious winners for ADR are Grimkit. But I think Merc's got a real good ADR as well.
Yeah, definitely.
They got a really good ADR. And then Legion. They got a good pair that just randomly got 40 points of specialist in both lists.
Yeah.
Which is never bad. Just, you know.
Yeah, it's not, there's no Helios on their ADR, so they're not going to play it, are they?
Yeah. And, well, Krix ADR. I mean, the Negra 2 is cool, but I think, yeah, you'll lack a bit of a, I don't know, something that is not Agathia.
Yeah, although Agathia is not terrible, she might be enough.
Would have been cool to have, like, Lich 2, for example, on ADR. That would have been cool.
Yeah, that would actually be quite good. Just being able to swap between having, like, double Bane Riders with a Wraith Engine or single Bane Riders with Dara Wrath or having, like, Max Warriors, Midnights or obviously kind of all of this, but just being able to chop and change, like, the finer details if you're Gatsby 2 Darko, or even Gatsby 3. Gatsby 3 would have been, in light of the new theme, Gatsby 3 would have been really strong on ADR with maybe alongside Denny 2. I don't know.
But he was just on ADR.
Sorry?
He just came out of ADR. But yeah, then again.
Yeah, I know. Because he got a good theme for, so they took him off the
rock. Then again, so did Agathia, so.
Yeah, Agathia's been stuck on ADR just forever.
Until people play her.
It's not going to happen, guys. She's a really good battle box caster. She's very good at her job, which is to be a nice, solid caster to learn to play the game with.
As we've said, the obvious winners of ADR are Grimkin, Mercs, and Legion.
With some honorable mentions to, like, Rhett and Menoth. Maybe Trolls.
Yeah,
maybe Trolls.
I really, really want to make Denegra 2 work in general. So it'd be nice to make her work in ADR, if I could.
Like maybe a Denny 2 Black Industries with like a ton of Jackson stuff, and then maybe Terminus and Infernal Machines or Slaughter Fleet.
About Dark Industries, I also think that Dark Industries is a trap.
Yeah.
Speaking of traps.
For the same reasons?
No, in general. Because actually Dark Industries, what you want to do is you bring Krix Jacks.
And the trap is that you've brought Krix Jacks.
Exactly. I mean, and this is even based on some experience, right? So at GlockCon, I decided that on the last day, I was gonna play Gorshade 1, because Gorshade 1, and Sasha said that he's very nice and had to try something and etc. Also, I made it hilarious on day 2, not on the final day. I made a hilarious mistake thinking that he did have Hellfire. He doesn't. He's got Hex Blast.
Mm-hmm.
So I played him into the mirror, into Lich 1 Ghost Fleet. This didn't really go well. Just so you know. Yes. No, actually, that was even on the first day. Anyway, so I played him into a lot of things and turned out that, well, you'd expect him to be good in Hordes, right? I mean, it's what Gorshade 1 does. He should be, or at least, or you hope that he's good in Hordes. It just got me ass kicked. He just has no threat extenders. He's got to take it on the nose. Yeah, you can say, okay, I got this Star Cross, and I got everything. Well, everything you want. Well, that's all that is great. Mm-hmm. But still, your opponent just randomly hits your, if your opponent manages to just randomly hit your Jack is gone. It's over. It dies. And then there's no amount of Carapace that's helping you there. I really think Black Industries is a trap.
I have been having a good time so far playing around with it. But I recognize your caveats. Like, I played Venithrax Black Industries in a tournament, and it was the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life, because playing a list with, like, 6 heavies is just stressful. And I don't understand how to do it. There's a reason I never played Legion, even in Mark II.
Why is it stressful?
What's this thing about your models being valuable? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I like to give my opponent models to kill in return for killing his models, but with like a 6 heavy list, that doesn't really work.
Sure.
It was a lot of fun, but it ended up not feeling particularly good. But I have also played some Denegra 2 in Black Industries that feels very good, because that list can afford to stand off and just like do the early work with Hellmouths. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to stand off, I'll take your gunshots, I will Hellmouth some stuff that's coming at me. And then it can switch into this hyper-aggressive thing with, you know, incorporeal heavies and sweet Curse of Shadows and Damnation trickery. You know, the shenanigans for days in the list.
I think the same thing goes a bit with Scabbers. They're like, okay, Scabbers, Black Industries.
He gets a lot out of just playing a couple of the cool character jacks.
Yeah, you really want that check with him, but he just, I think he's still better in Dark Code.
This is true. This is very, very true. I can't really argue with that statement. Though, I also think the Scabbers' problem is that other casters are better in Dark Host. Alright, so, we have in the past called ourselves Prophets and Wizards. So,
yes.
I'm going to ask both of you to tell me your Dark Horse pick for a list that is going to surprise the meta and take it by storm.
Okay, so, my pick is Durst. Like, I think it kind of dropped off a lot of people's radar. The theme forces are really good for him at the moment in terms of you've got, like a lot of different choices for how it can benefit his Jack. So you can give, they can get like blessed weapons in one theme force. They can get Hand of Vengeance in another theme force, or you can get like Repo on your support pieces in another theme force. So I think there's, especially now you can get, like Idrian's in all the, theme forces. So whereas before, like, Durst might have been lacking some guns to force engagement. Now he can take that and still get all the bits and pieces for his first Jack. So Durst is my he'll be my sleeper pick.
Okay, Class, what do you got?
Well, I want to say Mercs. In general, I don't want to pin myself onto one specific caster. I heard on the another podcast, Dark Guidance, it was, about how great they were or how happy they were with Gaston. Cause apparently nobody does nothing quite like Gaston. The thing is that I don't really know the song from the Disney movie, so I can't really quote it perfectly. But anyway, but I'm not sure if Gaston is going to be the thing, but, basically Mercs, pre-Ghost Fleet nerf, Mercs had one thing, they could solve everything, they could kill everybody and anybody, they could just not play into Kricks. Well, since Ghost Fleet is off the radar, I think they might benefit the most, meta-wise. And add to that, that still a lot of people have no clue what Mercs do, have no idea what they can expect, have no idea about all the hidden synergies that are inside the faction. So yeah, I think there's a lot of good times ahead for Mercs in general.
Well, I actually agree with you on that one. You stole the answer I had planned on, that I thought I'd, you know, didn't think anyone would get in there. Because yeah, I've always thought that, like, since Mark 3 started, I've been looking at Mercs going, it's all there. It's all there. There's just a few things that need to click. And the fact that they don't have to deal with Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet anymore is a pretty big boost. So, so I'm gonna say that the dark horse here is Grim One playing an aggressive scenario list, possibly featuring multiple units of Northkin Raiders and Ambush Bears, like a list that just comes at you from early in the game. The Raiders are advanced deploy, all the pigs you can take in that list, advanced deploy, Ambush Bears, ambush. It's a list that can
Fire Eaters,
of course.
Never go anywhere without Fire Eaters.
Yep. Like, you've got this whole list that can very aggressively come up the board, do a lot of damage, benefits a lot from Grim's Feet, and then you can play a hardcore, punchy battle group of, like, of Rock and a Mauler or whatever around it that benefit a lot from the fact that they extend their threat ranges. No one else can prevent running and charging with their feet. His control area is now a real control caster control area.
14 inches.
My bold prediction on that my Prophet of Wizard prediction is the Grim One is the new Denegar 2. Don't forget that 17 is way more live than any scenario pack Mark 2 Denegar 2 was ever allowed near.
Oh, yeah, true.
Do we have any final comments before we wrap up our Prophetry and Wizardry for the 2018 meta?
Well, the first closing thought I have is there's only 3 spots left for the Belgian Masters, so if you still want to come, you know what to do. The second closing thought is I think if Oz Machine can make a cast of 2 hours talking about nothing, I think we did a pretty great job as well of a 2-hour cast talking about nothing.
By the time I'm finished editing, we'll be way tighter than Oz Machine.
It'll sound focused. You'll just mumble and jumble and stuff things together that we didn't say together at all. You're a magician as well.
I'm aspiring to be a witch. It's far better than magician. That's what Terry Pratchett taught me.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We have one final segment before we sign off, of course. And that is hashtag feeding the dragon father.
You know what? I'm going to start because it was my idea anyway. So best food I had all week was, as already spoiled on Twitter, I want to call it blood, literally translated from Dutch name is blood sausage. So it's a bit like Scottish black pudding, but more refined. And the reason why I say this, on Twitter I said that it was because it's Belgian, but in reality, if you just look at the inside of the dish.
I understand what you're saying, but I have to fundamentally disagree. I feel like black puddings are better the bigger the grains are.
I didn't say good or bad. Right, I said refined.
Oh, fair. Refined is a perfectly accurate word in that sense.
Okay, so I fried it up with some apples because it's just great with apple. And then the one thing that made it really special for me is that with black sausage, I'm never sure if I want to really cook it or if I just want to eat it raw. Right, I'm. Maybe I'm strange like that, but I like this stuff raw as well. So what I did was I kind of cooked it only halfway. It was delicious.
All right, Ryan, what's your food highlight for the week?
Food highlight for this week is probably the baklava from the Greek takeaway tonight. Traditionally, they do like Greek kebabs and stuff. So normally everyone goes there on a night out. And like the kebabs are suspicious unidentified meat. So you don't eat those, but like the other stuff they do is really good. So there's I've had 2 slabs of the baklava already, and there's another slice in the fridge that might get devoured before bed if it's not likely to last a night one way or another.
All right, well,
that's nice.
Let me tell you then about my current favorite way to roast a chicken. Take yourself a very sharp knife, and you just sort of just like slide it in under the skin and just lift the skin off a chicken. Like a whole chicken. Mm. We're talking a whole chicken here. Just lift the skin off. Yeah. Like don't, so that you can like stuff something in under that skin but it doesn't attach. Then you take yourself a bowl, you crush up some feta cheese, like a whole block of feta cheese, and about an equal amount of sun-dried tomatoes, a little bit of olive oil, maybe a touch of butter. You mash all that up and you stuff that in underneath. The butter is good for like getting very hot and crisping things up.
Mm-hmm.
So you stuff that in under the skin of the chicken.
Okay.
So like, you just lift all the skin up off the breast of the chicken. Same on the legs of the chicken. You stuff that like feta cheese, so dried tomato mix in there, and then you stick it in the oven with, you know, itself and whatever potatoes, vegetables, roastable things that you like.
Yeah.
Super impressive meal. Pretty easy to prepare. Absolutely delish. And with that,
and also come to the Belgian Masters.
Do come to the Belgian Masters. I'll be there. Klaas will be there. And thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 10, our We're in Double Digits Now episode, and we'll find out soon if we're Prophets and Wizards episode. Good night, and thank you.
Good night. Goodbye.